is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Richard Fontaine, the CEO of the Center for New American Security, writing at Foreign Affairs about the People's Republic of China over several administrations, over the vision that America had once upon a time in the 60s. I grew up with China declaring that the U.S. was the running dog. However, in the late 80s, the H.W. Bush administration dealt with China in a whole new fashion because perhaps because George H.W. Bush had been an ambassador to China for Richard Nixon, perhaps because China itself had changed. So there we were in the late 20th century and things were going so well. And then, Richard, a very good evening to you. Things went badly somewhere between the George H.W. Bush administration and what we have now. How would you characterize those early days, how Washington imagined China, what Washington believed that was possible for China? Good evening to you.
Hi, thanks for having me. Well, if you go back even a little bit further from the opening to China under Nixon and Kissinger through 1989, there was the shared enemy in the Soviet Union, which brought both together in a strategic alignment. And China was a poor country that was, you know, an influential power on its borders at best and had gotten out of the business of things we didn't like previously, like bankrolling communist revolution in what were then called third world countries. 1989, with the Tiananmen Square massacre, George H.W. Bush dispatched his national security advisor, Brent Scowcroft, on a secret mission to speak with Deng Xiaoping and basically try to preserve the relationship, knowing that it was going to be buffeted in the extreme because of the human rights abuses. But, you know, even for and then you sort of get to, you know, the halcyon days of hope in the Clinton administration and even to some degree in the Bush administration, where the objective, or at least the hope, was somehow to transform China through U.S. policy. It's bringing it into the WTO, the internet and information flows, the rise of a middle class in China, its integration into the world and institutions and the economy was thought maybe to have a liberalizing effect on the Chinese Communist Party and the society, to have China become more invested in the status quo international order. And the past few years, the story has been that not happening. And everyone, I think, trying to determine what do we do now.
If I follow your presentation correctly, there is another model to look at how it worked to deal with a regime that is committed to abuse of its own people and its neighborhood. This is the Soviet Union, of course, and you point to George Kennan's extremely famous article in Foreign Affairs, the publication you're publishing in 1947, the quote about what is to be done with the Soviet Union. Either we work for, quote, either the breakup or the gradual mellowing of Soviet power. Was that ever an ambition in Washington about the Chinese Communist Party and about the abuse of its people, that we hoped for a breakup or a mellowing?
A breakup, no. A mellowing, there are some who thought, well, China will, as it gets richer, as its people get more educated and connected to the world and agitate more for their basic rights, then you'll see a gradual mellowing or sort of some degree liberalization at home. And of course, under Xi Jinping, we've seen the opposite, which is China has become more coercive, more into social control and more able to wield those tools of power. It's not that technology has empowered the Chinese individual at the expense of the state, but rather enabled the state to conduct surveillance of its population in a way that would have been unthinkable a few decades ago. And so, there was that hope. But, you know, the other thing is that the mellowing that Kennan was referring to is a mellowing of the world revolutionary impulse that the Soviet Union had outside its borders. And we've seen, you know, with respect to China, an increase in its assertiveness and coercion over the past few years rather than a decrease.
So we had a clear mission. At least George Kennan gave the State Department a mission to aim for a breakup or the gradual mellowing. In fact, both happened. And now we have Act Three. You know, stay tuned. However, we come now to your general analysis that the U.S. at this moment lacks something as clear of a goal as Mr. Kennan gave us in 1947. What would that look like, Richard?
Well, my suggestion for an objective of U.S.-China policy is to ensure that China is either unable or unwilling to overturn the regional and global order. It's somewhat abstract, but at first glance already, you can see that it would eliminate several other possible objectives and some that people put on the table, that China's going to be transformed through engagement domestically, for example, toward a more liberal power, or that China is going to become a more responsible stakeholder in any meaningful time frame, or that that we should seek regime change in China and the breakup of China or something like that. And, you know, that allows for a range of possible outcomes in the U.S.-China relationship and in China itself. But it stems from what we care about the most, which is not keeping China down or simply competing with China, but rather a preservation of those elements of regional and global order that have been good for Americans. And by the way, not only good for Americans, but good for a lot of people.
What we have then is a puzzle about what is to be done with China today. We're no longer reviewing mistakes that were made or presumptions that did not turn out to be accurate. We're looking at what to do with China today. And Richard, how would we go about starting this focus? Do we need another George Kennan? I nominate you, of course, Richard. You're writing for Foreign Affairs. Do we need an administration to sit down with all of its counselors and identify its mission? Mr. Trump seemed to identify, you quote, the Secretary of State, Mr. Pompeo, during the Trump administration. He means to end the regime. It must change its way. We used to call that regime change. I do not believe that is now the policy of the Biden administration. Is that correct?
That is correct. And, you know, in the what is to be done, you know, first establishing, I think, an objective along the lines of what I suggested or some formulation thereof has the benefit of not suggesting that there's a counter China block that in which we wish to enlist allies and partners the way there was a Western bloc. In the Cold War, there was an Eastern bloc and a Western bloc. They traded with each other. They defended each other or were willing to defend each other. And the same thing on our side. And that's not what's at issue here. The issue, the thing to do is to look at those areas of regional and international order, which are, you know, abstract at first glance, but have things to do with the economy and technology and maritime rules and human rights, all those things, and build issue-based coalitions of like-minded countries which the United States can be involved in to resist China where necessary, to bolster our own position where necessary, potentially even to cooperate if there's some areas to do that. But to build issue-based coalitions on the areas that are most important to us and that are most contested. And that would avoid going to countries around the world and saying, hey, join our anti-China bloc, which no country will sign up to. But that will get at some of the issues that are most important to us.
I'm speaking with Richard Fontaine, the CEO of the Center for New American Security. His new piece in Foreign Affairs about a mission for the Biden administration, what is to be done with China. When we come back, there are unusual contradictions to China these days that need to be dealt with. One is that the general opinion is that China's waiting for the U.S. to break up or to dissolve itself, the regime change in Washington. How do you go from that presumption in Beijing to the expectation of what is to be done with China? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.